We're talking about the steps to reduce the presence of PFAS in drinking water and how the DNR is responding. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. PFAS are a family of chemicals that have been used for decades in products that are all around us, like tape and nonstick pans and makeup and fast food wrappers, certain types of firefighting foam. Wisconsin has been working to get a handle on the environmental impact, working to set PFAS standards for drinking water, for groundwater, surface water among the priorities. Public hearing for that set for December 1st. Do you live near a PFAS contamination site? What impact has it had? Are you afraid to drink the water from your tap? How has it affected your life? It's 800-642-1234. Kyle Burton is Field Operations Director for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Drinking and Groundwater Program. Kyle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. So give us some opening thoughts, if you will, on PFAS and how much does the DNR have a handle on the amount of contamination that is out there in drinking water?
Okay, well, thank you. I think you laid out really nicely in your open there what PFAS are. You know, a group of over 5,000 man-made chemicals that were invented in the 30s. They were introduced in the industrial manufacturing commercial use in the 40s. They are in almost everything we use, from nonstick cookware, waterproof clothing, stain-resistant textiles. You mentioned aqueous film-forming, firefighting foam, or AFFF food packaging. So they're ubiquitous throughout our lives. They are exceptionally resistant to degradation, and when discharged into the environment, they stay there for a long time. They don't break down. And they have a tendency to a bioaccumulator build up in humans, fish, and wildlife. PFAS have been discovered in groundwater, soil, air, sediment, surface water, drinking water, as well as in humans, wildlife, and fish in Wisconsin, as well as nationally and in internationally. So ingesting contaminated water or food are those primary pathways through which they get into our bodies.
So, as you look at the decades of the use of PFAS and the use of these human-made chemicals, what should the role of the DNR be to contain them, to stop leaching into drinking water, to stop the spread?
Well, there are a few ways that we're working on trying to get a handle on the PFAS issue in Wisconsin. One of those ways are when we find PFAS in the environment, we begin what's called an environmental investigation or a remediation investigation. And the process for that, Kate, is laid out in state law. Our state statutes require responsible parties to develop and implement an investigation that determines the degree and extent of that contamination. So really finding where that contamination is and how far it has gone or what's the universe of that contamination. It also requires state law, also requires that responsible party to implement interim actions to ensure public health. So if we find it and we know there are pathways to exposure to humans or wildlife or fish, we ask those responsible parties to, or state law requires those responsible parties to ensure to implement interim actions, maybe giving folks bottled water or installing treatment system in homes. Responsible parties also need to then.
And when you talk about responsible parties, who are these responsible parties? Who has the blame of being the polluter?
Well, blame is a difficult word sometimes to use when it comes to PFAS, because PFAS was one of those compounds that was put into things that we use every day, and we did not maybe at the time know of the detrimental effects. So one example I'll give you is that at airports, federal regulations required airports to use and test the use of AFFF foam. So by following the regulations, airports did this, and in some areas around the state and nationally, inadvertently put PFAS into the ground, which then may have percolated into groundwater. So Potential responsible parties could be places like airports. They could be in industries that had used PFAS in their industrial use, places that created nonstick cookware in Michigan, Wolverine, who put waterproofing on shoe leather. So responsible parties or people that have used PFAS or industries that have used PFAS kind of run the gamut from our own Department of Defense to aluminum manufacturers.
We're talking with Kyle Burton, who is Field Operations Director for the DNR's Drinking and Groundwater Program. We're discussing the strategies the DNR is taking to manage PFAS contamination. With your questions and thoughts, what actions would you like to see lawmakers take on the issue? Do you live near a PFAS contamination site? What impact has it had on your family, on your community? 800-642-1234. Kyle, the DNR is holding public input meetings on PFAS investigations, cleanup. What are you hearing from people in testimony around the state?
Well, we're hearing from impacted people, impassioned pleas to continue our work, to set standards, to do more science-based research, to better understand the impacts of PFAS, to better understand how to remediate, how maybe to treat the compounds that may have been in the drinking water. We're hearing asks for resources to address the impact of PFAS on whether it be homeowners with private wells or public drinking water systems who may need to incur expenses to treat the water that they serve their constituents that may have been impacted by PFAS.
How does this public input inform the rulemaking process?
The rulemaking process requires public input. We need public input. We need to hear what people are asking for on both sides of the issues. And we need to, we're required through the rulemaking process to consider those comments and make changes to our proposals based on those comments.
And Wisconsin state law requires people or corporations at fault for PFAS contamination to conduct their own site investigations. How much trust do you place in these site investigations and the potential scale of the contamination that is being investigated?
Well, you make a good point, that the self-implementing nature of our cleanup process. And it is a tried and tested process. We've been using this investigation process for decades. We have used it in cleaning up other types of contaminations over the years, and actually have worked with and closed, you know, over 10,000 contamination cases around the state for other contaminants. I think trust is very important. The law requires certified consultants to come in and work with responsible parties. And our role as a DNR is to ensure through submittals from the responsible party and their consultants that the site investigation, interim actions, public notification, engagement with the folks that might be impacted are being taken throughout the course of the investigation. So while we're not doing the investigation as an agency or as a state, our role is to oversee that and give input when asked.
What is a reasonable timeline for these investigations that are not conducted by the DNR?
Timelines are very case specific. In years past with smaller investigations, maybe a leaky underground storage tank at a gas station, those can be worked through and closed out in a matter of months or some years. The PFAS investigations, depending on the scope and extent of the contamination, how far reaching is the issue, they can take much longer. I don't know that I have a reasonable recommendation or thought on what the time frame might be for those.
Kyle Burton works on the drinking and groundwater program for the state DNR. We're discussing PFAS contamination, the threat to drinking water sources across the state. Are you worried about your exposure to PFAS and confused about what is a safe level? Is your community doing enough to address forever chemicals? Have you been to a public hearing on PFAS? What did you learn? What did you say in your testimony? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Kyle Burton here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing human-made forever chemicals in the environment and the role of the DNR. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The administrator of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, said last month that regulating PFAS has been one of his top priorities. We talked with Attorney General Josh Call Friday, who said that the State Justice Department is advocating for PFAS policy changes at the state and national level.
And we've been leading national groups of AGs in advocating for those stronger protections. So the efforts to bring potential enforcement actions are continuing, and our efforts to strengthen protections for people across the country and in Wisconsin are continuing as well.
How should these human-made chemicals be regulated? Who should take charge of cleanup at airports, at military installations? Is your drinking water safe? 800-642-1234. The DNR's Field Operations Director for the Drinking and Groundwater Program, Kyle Burton, stays with us. Kyle, can you explain what is coming down from the U.S. EPA on PFAS? What are you watching there?
Thank you. We are encouraged to see this current administration and several federal agencies showing their coordinated and ongoing commitment to confront PFAS contamination. With their PFAS roadmap, it's a comprehensive strategy to really address PFAS. It really has put in action or advanced the actions of things that have already been they've already had in place. So the roadmap focuses on three main goals: research, learning more about the compounds, restrict finding what compounds we're still using out there and restricting the use of those, and then remediate, again, finding that where we have issues and taking action on those areas. So EPA's roadmap aligns really well with Wisconsin's PFAS action plan, which came out a year or two ago. Both emphasize the importance of using a science-based approach and investing in research and working to help lift up voices and protect the disadvantaged communities that are out there and work towards the goal of pollution prevention.
Yes, how do you see that integration there between what the U.S. EPA is saying and doing and what you see at the ground level here in Wisconsin?
Well, I mentioned the PFAS, Wisconsin's PFAS action plan. And EPA's PFAS roadmap, they really align really well. For those that don't know, our PFAS action plan was something that came out of Wisconsin's PFAS Action Council, which was created by Governor Evers and was made up of over 20 state agencies. And what came out of that collaboration was some guiding principles that we're all aware of, which is ensuring environmental justice, health equity, innovation, pollution prevention. We have that committee has recommended several actions, which includes standard setting, both in the EPA's roadmap and Wisconsin's action plan, sampling, finding more of where it may be located, preventing the ongoing pollution, engaging and educating the community, research and knowledge, learning more about how to combat this issue, phasing out the use of compounds that are chemicals that are in some of the products that we use, investing in the future, finding resources for those that are impacted, and identifying and addressing those historical discharges through the remediation program.
So what I'm hearing is DNR is working on a number of fronts, but we've also heard from business groups such as the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce say the state should wait for a national federal standard. Why should the state go ahead and establish its own PFAS guidelines?
Well, there had been a lapse in guidance from the EPA when it came to PFAS contamination. And the science-based information we were receiving from folks like our own state Wisconsin Department of Health Services was that there are health effects associated with ingestion of these compounds. And we felt it as a state and as an agency important for us to move forward and follow other states that have done the same thing around the country, to move forward, to set standards, to really protect our communities the best that we can.
Kyle Burton is with us, Field Operations Director for the DNR's Drinking and Groundwater Program, as we discuss steps the DNR is taking to contain forever chemicals, prevent PFAS from leaching into drinking water, and what guidelines will look like. 800-642-1234 to join in. Kyle, we heard from Bob in Clay Banks, called, couldn't stay with us. Bob wants to know if other countries have similar groundwater problems with PFAS that the U.S. and Wisconsin are experiencing.
Certainly. PFAS contamination is an international issue. Some of the leading science has come from places like Australia, countries in Europe. This is a compound and a contamination issue that has been documented internationally.
Dave emailed to ask why PFAS were approved for use in the first place. Was there long-term testing on the effects?
Yeah, no. And that's typical for the way our national structure is, where we're not necessarily looking at the long-term effects or the health effects of compounds as they're being introduced initially. Those type of actions seem to come after some compounds are put into use.
So that look back is after perhaps the damage has already been done, or after those chemicals have leached into the environment.
Potentially.
The DNR is considering a permanent ban on the use of PFAS foam except in emergencies, and the rule would provide guidance on foam testing and treatment, storage, disposal, all of that. Environmental groups that say the absence of PFAS indicator levels are weakening the proposed rules. What are your thoughts on that?
I think more data is what we need. I think we need potentially to go out there and collect more data. We don't have an excess of PFAS data in Wisconsin. We haven't done a full out canvassing in the state to really understand what that the scope and extent of the issues are. We know of several hotspots around the state, and we're spending a lot of time and resources addressing those. We don't have enough information to say that PFAS isn't an issue, and being protective and proactive, we want to. I think that's why you see the actions being taken that are being taken.
But if you can kind of parse the severity here, what is the difference between several hotspots and when you look at a DNR map that shows dozens upon dozens of contamination sites? What is the difference?
Yeah. Yeah, over 53 open PFAS contamination sites out there around the state right now, and we really haven't been able to put the time and resources into a full understanding of where more might be. So there's the potential for there to be more contamination around the state, which is why we're working towards putting those protective standards in place.
Where is dire resources needed on the PFAS front? What could help with that research that you say is lacking?
Well, I think those agencies like the Department of Natural Resources that are doing a lot of the cleanup work, the investigations. We are not funded for PFAS work. PFAS work has been emergent and it is coming, and our funding levels and our staffing levels have remained relatively static since we took on this work. And we still have the additional work of contamination cleanup and investigation for other types of compounds. So, I think funding more research specifically for PFAS within the state agencies could be helpful. And what's really important is funding for those communities and individuals that are impacted. So those folks that are feeling the pain or feeling the impacts of PFAS contaminations can have some financial recourse to really address a situation which they've been thrust into.
The DNR's Kyle Burton is with the Drinking Water and Groundwater Program. DNR has identified dozens of PFAS contamination sites. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about PFAS contamination in Wisconsin. What communities are doing to manage the environmental problem? It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last month, we talked with Eau Claire's utilities manager, Lane Berg, who told us he'd much rather see government agencies working in partnership on PFAS as opposed to discussing penalties.
We're stuck in a tough situation as a municipality dealing with something that we did not put in the ground.
Is your community taking on PFAS containment and cleanup? What is that like? What questions do you have for the DNR about drinking water and PFAS? 800-642-1234. Kyle Burton is Field Operations Director for the DNR's Drinking Water and Groundwater Program. He's here for the hour. Let's bring on a caller now. Dave is joining us from Nakusa. Dave, hi.
Hey, great show. A great guest, real problem in Wisconsin and I'm sure elsewhere. The question basically is, what is PFAS? I know you talked a little bit about it earlier, but like, I think I heard a rumor it comes from firefighting foam. So I'm assuming it's a chemical that is used in the production of things, but how does it leach into the environment? I mean, there's not too many firefighting foams around the state of Wisconsin. So how does it get there? And then what does it do to us? Does it give us cancer? Do we grow a third eye in the back of our head? How does
health
it kill
implications?
Why is it bad?
Dave, yeah. Thank you. Kyle, go ahead.
Great question. Thanks. And we can't talk about these types of things enough. Folks like myself who deal with PFAS almost every day, it kind of seems just almost common knowledge, but it's really not. Per and polyfluoroalkylate alkyl substances are a group of 5,000 man-made chemicals. They were invented in the 30s, and really the first industrial or commercial use was for nonstick cookware, right? That was the invention of the decade back maybe in the 50s where these nonstick pans were developed and marketed as wonder products. And it really was because of that PFAS. PFAS makes things slippery, makes things water run off of them. So you'll see them in your Gore-Tex clothing. You'll see them in your stain-resistant carpets or the stain proofer that they put maybe on furniture. And in firefighting foam, the AFFF firefighting foam that Dave talked about. Now, how do these things get into the ground? With AFFF, we mentioned a little bit earlier that AFFF has been and is required by the Federal Aviation Bureau or Association to be used at airports because it does a great job of putting out jet fuel fires. And also there's required testing. So, and it's used also at, Department of Defense installations where they also may have a lot of fuel fires. So there's a lot of testing there and there's a lot of outdoor testing that gets into the ground. And we measure these things in drinking water or groundwater in parts per trillion, which is minuscule. Think, one drop of water in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. So it doesn't take much to get to a level which is concerning for human health. And some of those concerns about human health.
Yes, what are links to cancer?
Yeah, there are risks to certain types of cancers. Testicular cancer is one of those. There's also more documented risks, such as developmental problems in fetuses and infants, reduced antibody responses, higher cholesterol levels, decreased immune response to vaccinations, and also kidney disease.
You worked on the ground with city officials in Eau Claire, in French Island, Rhinelander, more places. What are the power dynamics there between the DNR and communities that find PFAS in their wells and their water supply?
You know, I think when it comes to working with communities that have found it in water supplies, whether it be a municipal water system like Eau Claire or on French Island, where there's a group or a concentration of private wells, we really want to be partners with those impacted individuals. We understand, like Lane said, they're addressing an issue which they didn't create. So our work with Eau Claire specifically has been really a partnership. We've been trying to work with them, understanding the issues that they're that they're faced with, and really trying to work with them to get them get us both to our common goal. We have a common goal, and that's serving or supplying safe and reliable drinking water to their constituents. I believe that relationship, specifically in Eau Claire, has been going very well. We've been working. We're very pleased with the proactive and ongoing work that the city of Eau Claire is doing with their municipal water supply, and we continue to work with them on a daily, if not a weekly, if not daily basis.
When we talked with Eau Claire's utilities manager, Lane Berg, said the city is considering drilling new wells or building a water treatment center. How viable are those solutions as they look to contain the problem?
Those are the most viable solutions. Those are those long-term solutions that communities are faced at looking at. They're pricey. They're long-term investments, but a new safe source of water, locating a new well in an area where PFAS isn't impacting the groundwater for a place like Eau Claire, is a reasonable solution. And also there are treatments, proven treatments out there that are being used other places in the country, as close as Minnesota and as far away as New Jersey, where treatment plants, much like the treatment systems that are put on for other compounds, can be built and operated in a way where PFAS is removed from the drinking water source, and therefore the municipality can serve safe and reliable drinking water to the constituents.
Kyle, we also heard Eau Claire giving a thumbs up to appreciating the hazard index risk assessment approach for PFAS that was developed last year. What does that hazard risk assessment do?
Well, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services has put together some guidance or some information on how to address or how to deal with mixtures of different types of PFAS compounds in drinking water. So they've also given us recommendations for individual compounds, health-based recommendations for levels of individual PFAS compounds. But the question has always been, what if we have a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and how does that all add up to being dangerous or concerning, I should say? And the Department of Health Services Hazard Index guidance gives us a guide to follow when looking at mixtures of PFAS in drinking water. And it's really proactive, it's really health-based, and it's really a measure and a guidance that we follow to help ensure that the drinking water being served to the public is at levels where there aren't concerns for public health.
How widely is that index being used in communities around Wisconsin?
Well, whenever we work with a community, we take a look at the results from their PFAS sampling. We compare that to the hazard index, and we would partner with Eau Claire or with any other municipality the same way we're partnering with Eau Claire to address any levels of concern.
Kyle Burton is with us, Field Operations Director for the DNR's Drinking and Groundwater Program, as we discuss what are next steps for managing the environmental problems surrounding PFAS. Fielding your questions as well at 800-642-1234. Mary is joining us from Pewaukee. Mary, hi.
Good morning. Great show. I thought of another question. What can we as consumers and the listeners now going to be able to do at home? What do we not buy? What services do we not use to prevent more of this problem? And the reason I first called is that we have a well, and I was just wondering if the PFAS would be in our well. I suppose, pending on what we've been doing over the last, you know, how many years since we've had the well, since the house was built in the late 60s. And secondly, we have RO, reverse osmosis system, in our home. Does that take care of the PFAS in our drinking water?
Several great questions there. Kyle, addressing the wells first, perhaps. Go ahead.
Yeah. Lots to unpack there, and thank you for the question. Yes, in the case of private wells, whenever a private well owner has concerns about the quality of their drinking water, we recommend they work with a certified lab to test their drinking water for contaminants that they may be concerned about. So there are labs in Wisconsin that can sample or analyze drinking water sample for PFAS. Whether one should be concerned about PFAS in their drinking water well or not, it's really on a case-by-case basis. What kind of usage is going on around where you live? Is there a high concentration of industry? Do you live near a military installation or an airport? Certainly, when we begin an environmental investigation, the first thing we look at is pathways for potential human exposure. And if a drinking water wells in the area are there, well, we address that first. So if you were going to be a part, if you were around an environmental investigation, we would, and the responsible party would contact and do some sampling. But if folks are concerned about their drinking water well quality as it relates to PFAS, they can find more information on our website about who to call and to get their drinking water analyzed for PFAS.
Generally, what is the cost, and how often would you say that a homeowner would test their well?
For PFAS sampling, sadly, is right now quite expensive. The tests range between the $300 and $400 range to get your well sampled or your drinking water sampled or analyzed for PFAS. And the frequency as which to sample your well or continue to sample your well really is based on a few criteria. Whether you find it in an initial sample, the presence or absence of a potential source is really important too. So like if we find it and you live next to an ongoing industry or an installation where PFAS is being used, then we may want to continue to sample it to see if those levels increase. If we look for it and we don't find it and there really are no sources in the area, we may not need to sample as frequently or at all anymore.
Mary also mentioned having a reverse osmosis filtration system. What effect does that have on the problem?
Reverse osmosis is one of the treatments that is been proven to remove PFAS from drinking. Reverse osmosis removes almost all contaminants from drinking water. Not all, but many. But reverse osmosis does remove PFAS. I would caution anybody that has reverse osmosis in their home treating for other things or for other reasons and are concerned about PFAS, I would recommend folks contact the manufacturer of that treatment device and ask about PFAS removal just to make sure that it is removing or it can remove the PFAS. But reverse osmosis is one of the treatments that has been shown to remove PFAS from water.
We have the DNR's Field Operations Director in the Drinking Water and Groundwater Program. Kyle Burton is with us on the state of PFAS management in communities around the state. What questions do you have about PFAS in Wisconsin, the steps the DNR is taking? What actions would you like to see lawmakers take on this environmental problem? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Kyle Burton here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. We are discussing the PFAS problem in Wisconsin, what the DNR is doing to rein in forever chemicals. The DNR will hold a public hearing on December 1st as part of the rulemaking process to set maximum contaminant levels for PFAS in drinking water. Kyle Burton is Field Operations Director for the Drinking Water and Groundwater Program with us for about eight more minutes. Let's bring on Joel now in Plainfield. Joel, hi. What is your question?
Yeah, I was wondering if nitrates and pesticides, are they considered PFAS?
Joel, thanks for the question. Kate, you want me to take that?
Go right ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, nitrates, while a very important issue, probably equally important in the rural communities of Wisconsin as PFAS, nitrates are not in the same category as PFAS. Pesticides, there has been some link to pesticides and PFAS, but they really aren't, I think right now, at least a source we're focusing on as far as for PFAS contamination.
Joel, thank you for that question. Along the lines of filtration, we heard from Abby, who sent us an email, and Abby moved to Eau Claire 3.5 years ago. They started using a water filter, but are worried about the PFAS they've already ingested. What should people who have been drinking water contaminated with PFAS do, Abby asks, and how are they supposed to trust the water 3 years from now or even a decade from now?
Well, a couple of things. The good thing is about PFAS is it does, while it bioaccumulates in the body, the best way to avoid long-term health impacts is to reduce your exposure. And that's exactly what's happening in the city of Eau Claire. The water being served now is not at levels of concern according to our guidance and recommended health standards. So what that means is when you're not ingesting PFAS at levels of concerns, you're no longer really bioaccumulating. So the body will flush out those contaminants. As far as any long-term effects that people may be experiencing, or if they have questions about PFAS contamination as it relates to the health, really the best advice we can give is to consult their physicians.
The DNR has said that water systems that serve communities of color, that serve low-income communities, rural communities, are more likely to be unsafe. How is the state addressing this problem? How are you looking at it from the DNR's perspective?
Yeah, that's a really good point. In rural and urban communities, the effects of contamination, they can have costly economic and health impacts on residents. Whether it's a rural community with homeowners with their own private wells, or residents in a city or town that may be renting their housing, or in cities that are reliant upon municipal water, efforts to be informed and take precautions like sampling or utilizing filtration systems may require out-of-pocket purchases that some folks cannot afford. Additionally, PFAS contamination nationwide tends to coexist with other pollution and contamination, and the highest levels of PFAS contamination in some states have been in disadvantaged communities. So what we're doing is, as we work to support the communities that are addressing PFAS contamination, we try to understand, we work to understand the population that is impacted, to ensure we're getting the right information to the right residents the right way. This may mean things like translating resources that we're putting out there, making sure our information on our website is available in additional languages. We sometimes engage with community organizations that represent underserved communities to make sure our messages are getting there, getting to those people that need it. And also, you know, there's a large contingent of our communities that may not be, you know, online savvy. So we work to make our materials available offline. We have resources and information where places where people can pick them up, or we send them information in the mail, those types of things.
Along those lines of spreading information, circling back to one of Mary and Pewaukee's questions, what can consumers do? What can consumers do to avoid buying products with PFAS for their home and their everyday use in their life?
That's a great question, one that's a little bit out of my purview. But I can tell you, just through personal knowledge, that there are PFAS-free products being sold. So products like cookware that may have traditionally contained PFAS are now being sold and marketed as PFAS-free. Same with food packaging, PFAS-free. Some of the larger fast food industries have, you know, stated that they want to go PFAS-free in their packaging. So understanding what the uses for PFAS might be, and then taking a look at whether that particular product or manufacturer is working to go PFAS-free in their products is one way people can avoid exposure.
Well, we only have about a minute left, Kyle, and you've worked in the Bureau of Drinking and Groundwater for more than two decades. With that institutional knowledge, and when PFAS concerns came on the horizon and certainly on your radar, do you find that in your program that PFAS now is the leading issue, one of the leading issues? Where does it stand?
It is certainly one of the leading issues. It is something that we work on tirelessly. It's something that many of us deal with every day. And we're really working to put together a plan where we can find more information, we can partner with those individuals that are impacted, and we can achieve our, my program, the drinking and groundwater program's ultimate goal, which is safe and reliable water to the constituents of Wisconsin.
And where are you at in that process very quickly? Like, what stage are you at to getting to clean drinking water?
Well, we're working to find more information. We're putting together a program where we can fund sampling at communities around the state of Wisconsin. We're also working, like you mentioned before, to set standards, safe drinking water levels for the communities in Wisconsin to, when they do sample for PFAS, they understand what those levels are. We all understand what the levels are, and we work together then to make sure that the water that's being served to their consumers of in Wisconsin are at safe levels as it relates to PFAS.
Kyle, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Kyle Burton is Field Operations Director for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Drinking and Groundwater Program. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.